There is no hope for the king, I'm afraid. Raythan folded his arms across his breastplate thoughtfully as he looked back at the throne room.
Your Grace? Dilaf asked.
King Iodin, Raythan explained. I had hoped to save him, though I never really expected the nobility to follow me without a fight. They're too entrenched in their ways. Perhaps if we had gotten to them right after the Riod. Of course, we weren't sure that whatever disease had taken the Elantrians wouldn't affect us as well.
Yadith struck down the Elantrians,
Dilaf said fervently. Yes, Raythan said, not bothering to look down at the shorter man. But oft-times Yadith uses natural processes to bring about his will. A plague will kill Fjordil as well as Aerilene.
Yadith would protect his chosen.
Of course, Raythan said distractedly, shooting one more dissatisfied glance down the hallway toward the throne room. He had made the offer out of duty, knowing that the easiest way to save Aerilon would be to convert its ruler, but he hadn't expected Iodin to respond favorably. If only the king knew how much suffering he could forestall with a simple profession of faith. It was too late now. Iodin had formally rejected Yadith. He would have to become an example. However, Raythan would have to be careful. Memories of the Dúladan Revolution were still stark in Raythan's mind. The death, blood, and chaos. Such a cataclysm had to be avoided. Raythan was a stern man, and a determined one. But he was no lover of carnage. Of course, with only 3 months' time, he might not have a choice. If he was going to succeed, he might have to incite a revolt. More death and more chaos. Horrible things to throw upon a nation that still hadn't recovered from its last violent revolution. However, Yadith's empire would not sit still and wait because a few ignorant nobles refused to accept the truth.
I suppose I expected too much of them, Raythan mumbled. They are, after all, only Aerilenes.
Dilaf made no response to the comment. I noticed someone odd in the throne room, Ardeth, Raythan said as they turned and walked out of the palace, passing both sculpture and servant without so much as a glance.
Perhaps you can help me identify her. She was Aeonic, but she was taller than most Aerilenes, and her hair was much lighter than the average Aerilish brown. She looked out of place.
What was she wearing, Your Holiness?
Dilaf asked.
Black. All black, with a yellow sash.
The new princess, Your Grace,
Dilaf hissed, his voice suddenly hateful.
New princess?
She arrived yesterday, the same as yourself. She was to be married to Iodin's son Raodin.
Raythan nodded. He hadn't attended the prince's funeral, but he had heard of the event. He hadn't known, however, of the impending marriage. The betrothal must have occurred recently.
She's still here, he asked, even though the prince died.
Dilaf nodded.
Unfortunately for her, the royal engagement contract made her his wife the moment he died.
Ah, Raythan said. Where is she from?
Teod, Your Grace, Dilaf said.
Raythan nodded, understanding the hatred in Dilaf's voice. Aerilon, despite the blasphemous city of Elantris, at least showed some possibility for redemption. Teod, however, was the homeland of Shu-Korath, a degenerate sect of Shu-Kessig, the parent religion of Shu-Dareth. The day Teod fell beneath Fjordan's glory would be a joyous day indeed.
A Teoish princess could be a problem, Raythan mused.
Nothing can hinder Yadith's empire.
If nothing could hinder it, Arteth,
then it would already encompass the entire planet. Yadath takes pleasure in allowing his servants to serve him, and grants us glory in bending the foolish before our will. And of all the fools in the world, Teoish fools are the most dangerous.
How could one woman be a danger to you, Your Holiness?
Well, for one thing, her marriage means that Teod and Erilan have a formal blood bond. If we aren't careful, we'll have to fight them both at once. A man is more likely to think himself a hero when he has an ally to support him.
I understand, Your Grace.
Raythan nodded, sweeping out into the sunlight. Pay attention, Ardeth, and I will teach you a very important lesson. One that few people know, and even fewer can properly use.
What lesson is that?
Delaf asked, following close behind.
Raythan smiled slightly. I will show you the way to destroy a nation. The means by which the man of Yadath can topple kingdoms and seize control of the people's souls.
I am eager to learn, Your Grace.
Good, Raythan said, looking across Kaye at the enormous wall of Elantris. It rose above the city like a mountain. Take me up there. I wish to view the fallen lords of Erilan.
When Raythan had first arrived at the outer city of Kaye, he had noted how indefensible it was. Now, standing atop the wall of Elantris, Raythan could see that he had actually underestimated how pathetic Kaye's fortifications were. Beautiful terraced steps ran up the outside of Elantris's wall, providing outside access to the top. They were firm, stone constructions. It would be impossible to destroy them in an emergency. If Kaye's inhabitants retreated into Elantris, they would be trapped, not protected. There were no archers. The Elantris city guard members carried large, unwieldy spears that looked like they were far too heavy to be thrown. They held themselves with a proud air, wearing unarmored yellow and brown uniforms, and they obviously considered themselves far above the regular city militia. From what Raythan had heard, however, the guard wasn't even really necessary to keep the Elantrians in. The creatures rarely tried to escape, and the city wall was far too large for the guard to patrol extensively. The force was more of a public relations operation than a true military. The people of Kaye felt much more comfortable living beside Elantris when they knew a troop of soldiers watched the city. However, Raythan suspected that in a war, the guard members would be hard-pressed to defend themselves, let alone protect Kaye's population. Erilan was a ripe jewel waiting to be pillaged. Raythan had heard of the days of chaos directly following Elantris's fall, and of the incalculable treasures that had been plundered from the magnificent city. Those valuables were now concentrated in Kaye, where the new nobility lived practically unguarded. He had also heard that, despite the thievery, a large percentage of Elantris's wealth, pieces of art too large to move easily, or smaller items that hadn't been plundered before Iodin began enforcing the city's isolation, remained locked within Elantris's forbidden walls. Only superstition and inaccessibility kept Elantris and Kaye from being raped by invaders. The smaller thieving bands were still too frightened of Elantris's reputation. The larger bands were either under Fjordel control, and therefore wouldn't attack unless instructed to do so, or had been bribed to stay away by Kaye's nobles. Both situations were extremely temporary in nature. And that was the basic reason Raythan felt justified in taking extreme action to bring Erilan under Fjordan control and protection.
The nation was an egg, balanced on the peak of a mountain, just waiting for the first breeze to plunge it to the hard ground below. If Fjordan didn't conquer Eirilan soon, then the kingdom would certainly collapse beneath the weight of a dozen different problems. Beyond inept leadership, Eirilan suffered from an overtaxed working class, religious uncertainty, and dwindling resources. All of these factors competed to deliver the final blow. His thoughts were interrupted by the sound of harsh breathing behind him. Dilov stood on the other side of the wall walk, looking out over Elantris. His eyes were wide, like those of a man who had been punched in the stomach, and his teeth were clenched. Raythan half expected him to start frothing at the mouth.
"I hate them,"
Dilov whispered in a harsh, almost unintelligible voice. Raythan crossed the wall walk to stand beside Dilov. Since the wall had not been constructed for military purposes, there were no battlements, but both sides had raised parapets for safety. Raythan rested against one of these, looking out to study Elantris. There wasn't much to see. He'd been in slums more promising than Elantris. The buildings were so decayed that it was a miracle any of them still had roofs, and the stench was revolting. At first he doubted anything could possibly be alive inside the city, but then he saw some forms running furtively along the side of a building. They were crouched, with their hands outstretched, as if prepared to fall on all fours. One paused, looking up, and Raythan saw his first Elantrian. It was bald, and at first Raythan thought its skin was dark, like that of a member of the Jindo noble caste. However, he could see splotches of light gray on the creature's skin as well. Great, uneven, pale masses, like lichen on a stone. He squinted, leaning forward against the parapet. He couldn't make out the Elantrian's eyes, but somehow Raythan knew they would be wild and feral, darting around like those of an anxious animal. The creature took off with its companions, its pack. "So this is what the Rio did," Raythan mused to himself. "It made beasts out of gods. Yadath had simply taken what was in their hearts and showed it for the world to see. According to Dorethai philosophy, the only thing that separated men from the animals was religion. Men could serve Yadath's empire. Beasts could serve only their lusts. The Elantrians represented the ultimate flaw of human arrogance. They had set themselves up as gods. Their hubris had earned their fate. In another situation, Raythan would have been content in leaving them to their punishment. However, he happened to need them. Raythan turned to Dilov. "The first step in taking control of a nation, Artith, is the simplest. You find someone to hate." "Tell me of them, Artith," Raythan requested, entering the room inside the chapel. "I want to know everything you know."
"They are foul, loathsome creatures," Dilov hissed, entering behind Raythan. "Thinking of them makes my heart grow sick, and my mind feel tainted. I pray every day for their destruction."
Raythan closed the door to his chambers, dissatisfied. It was possible for a man to be too passionate.
"Artith, I understand you have strong feelings," Raythan said sternly. "But if you are to be my Odiv, you will need to see through your prejudices. Yadath has placed these Elantrians before us with a purpose in mind, and I cannot discover that purpose if you refuse to tell me anything useful."
Dilov blinked, taken aback. Then, for the first time since their visit to Elantris, a level of sanity returned to his eyes. "Yes, Your Grace.
Raythan nodded.
Did you see Elantris before its fall?
Yes.
Was it as beautiful as people say?
Delaf nodded sullenly.
Pristine. Kept white by the hands of slaves.
Slaves?
All of Erilon's people were slaves to the Elantrians, Your Grace. They were false gods, giving promises of salvation in exchange for sweat and labor.
And their legendary powers?
Lies. Like their supposed divinity, a carefully crafted hoax to earn them respect and fear.
Following the Riod, there was chaos, correct?
Chaos, killing, riots, and panic, Your Grace. Then the merchants seized power.
And the Elantrians?
Raythan asked, walking over to take a seat at his desk.
There were few left, Delaf said. Most had been killed in the riots. Those remaining were confined to Elantris, as were all men that the Sheod took from that day forward. They looked much as you just saw them, wretched and subhuman. Their skin was patched with black scars, like someone had pulled away the flesh and revealed the darkness underneath.
And the transformations, did they abate at all after the Riod?
Raythan asked.
They continue, Your Grace. They happen all across Erilon.
Why do you hate them so, Ardeth?
The question came suddenly, and Delaf paused.
Because they are unholy.
And?
They lied to us, Your Grace. They made promises of eternity, but they couldn't even maintain their own divinity. We listened to them for centuries and were rewarded with a group of impotent, vile cripples.
You hate them because they disappointed you, Raythan said.
Not me. My people. I was a follower of Direthai years before the Riod.
Raythan frowned. Then you are convinced that there is nothing supernatural about the Elantrians other than the fact that Yadith has cursed them.
Yes, Your Grace. As I said, the Elantrians created many falsehoods to reinforce their divinity.
Raythan shook his head, then stood and began to remove his armor. Delaf moved to help, but Raythan waved the Ardeth away.
How, then, do you explain the sudden transformation of ordinary people into Elantrians, Ardeth?
Delaf didn't have a response.
Hate has weakened your ability to see, Ardeth,
Raythan said, hanging his breastplate on the wall beside his desk and smiling. He had just experienced a flash of brilliance. A portion of his plan suddenly fit into place.
You assume because Yadith did not give them powers, they did not have any.
Delaf's face grew pale.
What you say is...
Not blasphemy, Ardeth. Doctrine. There is another supernatural force besides our god.
The Sfrakis,
Delaf said quietly.
Yes.
Sfrakis. The souls of the dead men who hated Yadith. The opponents to all that was holy. According to Shudareth, there was nothing more bitter than a soul who had had its chance and thrown it away.
You think the Elantrians are Sfrakis?
Delaf asked.
It is accepted doctrine that the Sfrakis can control the bodies of the evil,
Raythan said, unbuckling his greaves.
Is it so hard to believe that all this time they have been controlling bodies of the Elantrians, making them appear as gods to fool the simple-minded and unspiritual?
There was a light in Delaf's eyes. The concept was not new to the Ardeth, Raythan realized. Suddenly his flash of inspiration didn't seem quite so brilliant. Dilaf regarded Raythan for a moment, then spoke.
"You don't really believe it, do you?" he asked. His voice uncomfortably accusatory, for one speaking to his Roden.
Raythan was careful not to let discomfort show.
"It doesn't matter, Ardeth. The connection is logical. People will follow it. Right now, all they see are the abject remnants of what were once aristocrats. Men do not loathe such. They pity them. Demons, however, are something everyone can hate. If we denounce the Elantrians as devils, then we will have success. You already hate the Elantrians. That is fine. To make others join you, however, you'll have to give them more of a reason than they disappointed us."
"Yes, Your Grace."
"We are religious men, Ardeth, and we must have religious enemies. The Elantrians are our Sfracas, no matter if they possess the souls of evil men long dead or evil men now living."
"Of course, Your Holiness. We will destroy them then?" There was eagerness in Dilaf's face.
"Eventually. Right now, we will use them. You will find that hate can unify people more quickly and more fervently than devotion ever could."
Chapter 7. Raoden stabbed the air with his finger. The air bled light. His fingertip left a glowing white trail behind it as he moved his arm, as if he were writing with paint on a wall, except without the paint and without the wall. He moved cautiously, careful not to let his finger waver. He drew a line about a handspan long from left to right, then pulled his finger down at a slight slant, drawing a curved line downward at the corner. Next, he lifted his finger from the unseen canvas and replaced it to draw a dot in the center. Those three marks, two lines and a dot, were the starting point of every aeon. He continued, drawing the same three-line pattern at different angles, then added several diagonal lines. The finished drawing looked something like an hourglass, or perhaps two boxes placed on top of each other, pulling in just slightly near the middles. This was Aeon Aeshi, the ancient symbol for light. The character brightened momentarily, seeming to pulse with life. Then it flashed weakly, like a man heaving his last breath. The Aeon disappeared, its light fading from brightness to dimness to nothing.
"You're much better at that than I am, Sule," Galadin said. "I usually make one line a little too big or slant it a bit too much, and the whole thing fades away before I'm done."
"It's not supposed to be like this," Raoden complained. It had been a day since Galadin had shown him how to draw aeons, and he had spent nearly every moment since then practicing. Every aeon he had finished properly had acted the same way, disappearing without producing any visible effect. His first acquaintance with the legendary magic of the Elantrians had been decidedly anticlimactic. The most surprising thing was how easy it was. In ignorance, he had assumed that Aeon Dor, the magic of the aeons, would require some sort of incantation or ritual. A decade without Aeon Dor had spawned hordes of rumors. Some people, mostly Dorethai priests, claimed the magic had been a hoax, while others, also mostly Dorethai priests, had denounced the art as blasphemous rites involving the power of evil.
The truth was that no one, not even the Dorethi priests, knew just what Aeon Dor had been. Every one of its practitioners had fallen to the Riod. Yet Galadin claimed Aeon Dor required nothing more than a steady hand and an intimate knowledge of the Aeons. Since only Elantrians could draw the characters in light, only they could practice Aeon Dor, and no one outside Elantris had been allowed to know just how simple it was. No incantations, no sacrifices, no special potions or ingredients. Anyone who was taken by the Sheod could perform Aeon Dor, assuming, of course, they knew the characters. Except, it didn't work. The Aeons were supposed to do something, at least something more than flash weakly and disappear. Raoden could remember images of Elantris as a child, visions of men flying through the air, incredible feats of power, and merciful healings. He had broken his leg once, and although his father had objected, his mother had taken him to Elantris for healing. A bright-haired figure had re-knit Raoden's bones with barely a wave of her hand. She had drawn an Aeon, just as he was doing, but the rune had released a powerful burst of arcane magic. "They're supposed to do something," Raoden said again, this time out loud. "They did once, Sule, but not since the Riod. Whatever took the life from Elantris also stole Aeon Dor's power. Now all we can do is paint pretty characters in the air." Raoden nodded, drawing his own Aeon, Aeon Reo. Four circles with one large square in the center, all five connected by lines. The Aeon reacted as all of the others had, building as if for some release of power, then dying with a whimper.
"Disappointing, Kolo."
"Very," Raoden admitted, pulling over a chair and sitting down. They were still in Galadin's small underground study. "I'll be honest with you, Galadin. When I saw that first Aeon hovering in the air in front of you, I forgot about everything. The filth, the depression, even my toe." Galadin smiled.
"If Aeon Dor worked, the Elantrians would still rule in Eriland. Riod or no Riod."
"I know. I just wonder what happened. What changed?"
"The world wonders with you, Sule,"
Galadin said with a shrug. "They must be related," Raoden mused. "The change in Elantris, the way the Sheod started making people demons rather than gods, the ineffectiveness of Aeon Dor. You aren't the first person to notice that, not by far. However, no one is likely to find the answer. The powerful in Eriland are much too comfortable with Elantris the way it is."
"Trust me, I know," Raoden said. "If the secret is to be found, it will have to come from us."
Raoden looked over the small laboratory. Remarkably clean and free from the grime that coated the rest of Elantris, the room had an almost homey feeling, like the den or study in a large mansion. "Maybe the answer is in here, Galadin," Raoden said. "In those books somewhere."
"Perhaps," Galadin said noncommittally.
"Why were you so reluctant to bring me here?"
"Because it's special, Sule. Surely you can see that. Let the secret out, and I won't be able to leave for fear it will be pillaged while I am gone."
Raoden stood, nodding as he walked around the room.
"Then why bring me?"
Galadin shrugged, as if not completely sure himself. Eventually he answered,
"You aren't the first to think the answer might be in those books. Two men can read more quickly than one."
Twice as quickly, I'd guess, Raoden agreed with a smile. Why do you keep it so dark in here?
We are in Elantris, Sule. We can't just go to the lamplighter store every time we run out of oil.
I know, but surely there's enough. Elantris must have had stores of oil before the Riod.
Ah, Sule, Galadin said with a shake of his head.
You still don't understand, do you? This is Elantris, city of the gods. What need have gods of such mundane things as lamps and oil? Look at the wall beside you.
Raoden turned. There was a metal plate hanging on the wall beside him. Though it was tarnished with time, Raoden could still make out the shape etched into its surface, Aeon Aeshi, the character he had drawn just a few moments ago.
Those plates used to glow more brightly and steadily than any lamp, Sule, Galadin explained. The Elantrians could shut them off with a bare brush of their fingers. Elantris didn't need oil. It had a far more reliable source of light.
For the same reason, you won't find coal, or even furnaces, in Elantris. Nor are there many wells, for water flowed from pipes like rivers trapped within the walls. Without Aeon Dor, this city is barely fit to be inhabited.
Raoden rubbed his finger against the plate, feeling the lines of Aeon Aeshi. Something catastrophic must have happened, an event lost in just 10 brief years' time. Something so terrible it caused the land to shatter and gods to stumble. However, without an understanding of how Aeon Dor had worked, he couldn't even begin to imagine what had caused it to fail. He turned from the plate and considered the two squat bookcases. It was unlikely that any of the books contained direct explanations of Aeon Dor. However, if they had been written by Elantrians, then maybe they would have references to the magic. References that could lead the careful reader to an understanding of how Aeon Dor worked. Maybe. His thoughts were interrupted by a pain from his stomach. It wasn't like hunger he had experienced on the outside. His stomach didn't rumble. Yet the pain was there, somehow even more demanding. He had gone 3 days now without food, and the hunger was beginning to grow insistent. He was only just beginning to see why it and the other pains were enough to reduce men to the beasts that had attacked him on his first day.
Come, he said to Galadin. There's something we need to do.
The square was much as it had been the day before. Grime, moaning unfortunates, tall, unforgiving gates. The sun was almost three-quarters finished with its trek through the sky. It was time for new inductees to be cast into Elantris. Raoden studied the square, watching from atop a building beside Galadin. As he looked, he realized that something was different. There was a small crowd gathered on top of the wall.
"Who's that?" Raoden asked with interest,
pointing to a tall figure standing high on the wall above Elantris's gates. The man's arms were outstretched, and his blood-red cloak was flapping in the wind. His words were hardly audible from such a distance, but it was obvious that he was yelling. Galadin grunted in surprise.
"A Dereth Ayorn? I didn't know there was one here in Aerilan."
"A Yorn? As in High Priest?"
Raoden squinted, trying to make out the details of the figure far above them.
"I'm surprised one would come this far east," Galadin said. "They hated Aerilan, even before the Riod."
"Because of the Elantrians?"
Galadin nodded.
"Though not so much because of Elantrian worship, no matter what they claim. The Derethi have a particular loathing for your country,
because their armies never figured a way to get through those mountains to attack you.
What do you suppose he's doing up there? Raoden asked.
Preaching. What else would a priest do? He's probably decided to denounce Elantris as some sort of judgment from his god. I'm surprised it took them so long.
People have been whispering it for years, Raoden said. But no one had the courage to actually teach such things. They're secretly afraid that the Elantrians are just testing them, that they will return to their former glory some day and punish all the unbelievers.
Still? Galadin asked.
I would have thought such beliefs would be gone after 10 years.
Raoden shook his head.
Even yet, there are many who pray for or fear the Elantrians' return. The city was strong, Galadin. You can't know how beautiful it once was.
I know, Sule, Galadin said. I didn't spend all of my life in Duladel.
The priest's voice rose to a crescendo, and he delivered one final wave of screams before spinning around and disappearing from view. Even from a distance, Raoden could hear the hate and anger in the Yorn's voice. Galadin was right. This man's words had been no blessing. Raoden shook his head, looking from the wall to the gates.
Galadin, he asked, what are the chances of someone being thrown in here today?
Galadin shrugged.
Hard to say, Sule. Sometimes weeks go without a new Elantrian. But I have seen as many as 5 cast in at once. You came 2 days ago, that woman yesterday. Who knows? Maybe Elantris will have new flesh for the 3rd day in a row. Kolo?
Raoden nodded, watching the gate expectantly.
Sule, what do you intend to do? Galadin asked uncomfortably.
I intend to wait. The newcomer was an older man, perhaps in his late 40s, with a gaunt face and nervous eyes. As the gate slammed shut, Raoden climbed down from the rooftop, pausing just inside the courtyard. Galadin followed, a worried look on his face. He obviously thought Raoden might do something foolish. He was right. The unfortunate newcomer just stared morosely at the gate. Raoden waited for him to take a step, to make the unwitting decision that would determine who got the privilege of robbing him. The man stood where he was, watching the courtyard with nervous eyes, his thin frame pulled up inside his robes like he was trying to hide within them. After a few minutes of waiting, he finally took his first hesitant step, to the right, the same way Raoden had chosen.
Come on, Raoden declared, striding out of the alleyway.
Galadin groaned, mumbling something in Duladin.
Tiorin, Raoden called, choosing a common Aeonic name.
The spindly newcomer looked up with surprise, then glanced over his shoulder with confusion.
Tiorin, it is you, Raoden said,
wrapping his hand around the man's shoulder. Then, in a lower voice, he continued.
Right now you have 2 choices, friend. Either you do what I tell you, or you let those men in the shadows over there chase you down and beat you senseless.
The man turned around to search the shadows with apprehensive eyes. Fortunately, at that moment, Sheor's men decided to move, their shadowed forms emerging into the light, their carnal eyes staring at the new man with hunger. It was all the encouragement the newcomer needed.
What do I do? The man asked with a quavering voice.
Run, Raoden ordered, then took off toward one of the alleys at a dash. The man didn't need to be told twice. He bolted so quickly that Raoden was afraid he would go careering down a side alley and get lost. There was a muffled yell of surprise from behind as Galadin realized what Raoden was doing.
The large Dulidan man obviously wouldn't have any problems keeping up. Even considering his time in Elantris, Galadin was in much better shape than Raedon.
"What in the name of Dolokan do you think you are doing, you idiot?" Galadin swore.
"I'll tell you in a moment," Raedon said, conserving strength as he ran.
Again he noticed that he didn't get out of breath, though his body did begin to grow tired. A dull feeling of fatigue began to grow within him, and of the three of them, Raedon was soon proven the slowest runner. However, he was the only one who knew where they were going.
"Right," he yelled to Galadin and the new man, then took off down a side alley.
The two men followed, as did the group of thugs, who were gaining quickly. Fortunately, Raedon's destination wasn't far away.
"Rulo,"
Galadin cursed, realizing where they were going. It was one of the houses he had shown Raedon the day before, the one with the unstable staircase. Raedon sprinted through the door and up the stairs, nearly falling twice as steps gave out beneath him. Once on the roof, he used the last of his strength to push over a stack of bricks, the remnants of what had once been a planter, toppling the entire pile of crumbling clay into the stairwell, just as Galadin and the newcomer reached the top. The weakened steps didn't even begin to hold the weight, collapsing to the ground with a furious crash. Galadin walked over and looked through the hole with a critical eye. Sheor's men gathered around the fallen steps below, their feral intensity dulled a bit by realization. Galadin raised an eyebrow.
"Now what, genius?"
Raedon walked over to the newcomer, who had collapsed after stumbling up the stairs. Raedon carefully removed each of the man's food offerings, and after tucking a certain one into his belt, he dumped the rest to the hound-like men waiting below. The sounds of battle came from below as they fought over the food. Raedon stepped back from the hole.
"Let's just hope they realize that they're not going to get anything more out of us and decide to leave."
"And if they don't?"
Galadin asked pointedly.
Raedon shrugged. "We can live forever without food or water, right?"
"Yes, but I'd rather not spend the rest of eternity on the top of this building."
Then, shooting a look at the new man, Galadin pulled Raedon to the side and demanded in a low voice,
"Sule, what was the point of that? You could have just thrown them the food bag in the courtyard. In fact, why save him? For all we know, Sheor's men might not have even hurt him."
"We don't know that.
Besides, this way he thinks he owes me his life."
Galadin snorted.
"So now you have another follower. At the cheap price of the hatred of an entire third of Elantris's criminal element."
"And this is only the beginning," Raedon said with a smile.
However, despite the brave words, he wasn't quite so certain of himself. He was still amazed at how much his toe hurt, and he had scraped his hands while pushing the bricks. While not as painful as the toe, the scrapes also continued to hurt, threatening to draw his attention away from his plans.
"I have to keep moving," Raedon repeated to himself. "Keep working. Don't let the pain take control."
"I'm a jeweler," the man explained. "Marishi is my name."
"A jeweler," Raedon said with dissatisfaction,
his arms folded as he regarded Marishi.
"That won't be of much use. What else can you do?"
Marishi looked at him indignantly, as if having forgotten that he had just a few moments ago been cowering in fear.
"Jewelry making is an extremely useful skill, sir."
"Not in Elantris, Sule," Galadin said,
peeking through the hole to see if the thugs had decided to leave. Apparently they hadn't, for he gave Raedon a withering look. Pointedly ignoring the doula, Raedon turned back to Marishi. "What else can you do?"
Anything.
That's quite broad, friend, Raoden said. Could you be a bit more specific?
Marishi brought his hand up beside his head with a dramatic gesture.
I am a craftsman, an artisan. I can make anything, for Domai himself has granted me the soul of an artist.
Galadin snorted from his seat beside the stairwell.
How about shoes? Raoden asked.
Shoes?
Marishi replied with a slightly offended tone.
Yes, shoes.
I suppose I could, Marishi said,
though such hardly demands the skill of a man who is a full artisan.
And a full id,
Galadin began, before Raoden hushed him.
Artisan Marishi,
Raoden continued in his most diplomatic of tones. Elantrians are cast into the city wearing only an Aerilish burial shroud. A man who could make shoes would be very valuable indeed.
What kind of shoes? Marishi asked.
Leather ones, Raoden said.
It won't be an easy calling, Marishi. You see, Elantrians don't have the luxury of trial and error. If the first pair of shoes do not fit, then they will cause blisters, blisters that will never leave.
What do you mean, never leave?
Marishi asked uncomfortably.
We are Elantrians now, Marishi, Raoden explained.
Our wounds no longer heal.
No longer heal?
Would you care for an example, artisan?
Galadin asked helpfully.
I can arrange one quite easily.
Kolo?
Marishi's face turned pale, and he looked back at Raoden.
He doesn't seem to like me very much, he said quietly.
Nonsense, Raoden said, putting his arm around Marishi's shoulder and turning him away from Galadin's grinning face.
That's how he shows affection. If you say so, master.
Raoden paused.
Just call me Spirit, he decided, using the translation of Aeon Rao.
Master Spirit.
Then Marishi's eyes narrowed.
You look familiar for some reason.
You've never seen me before in your life.
Now, about those shoes. They have to fit perfectly, without a bit of scraping or rubbing,
Marishi asked. I know it sounds difficult. If it's beyond your ability.
Nothing is beyond my ability, Marishi said.
I'll do it, Master Spirit.
Excellent.
They're not leaving, Galadin said from behind them.
Raoden turned to regard the large doula.
What does it matter? It's not like we have anything pressing to do. It's actually quite pleasant up here. You should just sit back and enjoy it.
An ominous crash came from the clouds above them, and Raoden felt a wet drop splat against his head.
Fantastic, Galadin grumbled. I'm enjoying myself already.
Chapter 8 Serene decided not to accept her uncle's offer to stay with him. As tempting as it was to move in with his family, she was afraid of losing her foothold in the palace. The court was a lifeline of information, and the Aerilish nobility were a fountain of gossip and intrigue. If she was going to do battle with Raethan, she would need to stay up to date. So it was that the day after her meeting with Kyan, Serene procured herself an easel and paints, and set them up directly in the middle of Iodin's throne room.
"What in the name of Domai are you doing, girl?"
the king exclaimed as he entered the room that morning, a group of apprehensive attendants at his side. Serene looked up from her canvas with imitation surprise.
"I'm painting, father," she said,
helpfully holding up her brush, an action that sprayed droplets of red paint across the Chancellor of Defense's face.
Iodin sighed. "I can see that you're painting. I meant, why are you doing it here?"
Oh, Serene said innocently. I'm painting your paintings, Father. I do like them so.
You're painting my...
Iodine asked with a dumbfounded expression, but... Serene turned her canvas with a proud smile, showing the king a painting that only remotely resembled a picture of some flowers.
Oh, for Domai's sake,
Iodine bellowed.
Paint if you must, girl. Just don't do it in the middle of my throne room.
Serene opened her eyes wide, blinked a few times, then pulled her easel and chair over to the side of the room near one of the pillars, sat down, and continued to paint. Iodine groaned.
I meant... Bah, Domai curse it. You're not worth the effort.
With that, the king turned and stalked over to his throne and ordered his secretary to announce the first item of business, a squabble between two minor nobles over some possessions. Aishi hovered down next to Serene's canvas, speaking to her softly.
I thought he was going to expel you for good, my lady.
Serene shook her head, a self-congratulatory smile on her lips. Iodine has a quick temper and grows frustrated with ease. The more I convince him of my brainlessness, the fewer orders he's going to give me. He knows I'll just misunderstand him and he'll just end up aggravated.
I am beginning to wonder how one such as he obtained the throne in the first place,
Aishi noted. A good point, Serene admitted, tapping her cheek in thought. Though perhaps we aren't giving him enough credit. He might not make a very good king, but he was apparently a very good businessman. To him, I'm an expended resource. He has his treaty. I'm just of no further concern.
I'm not convinced, my lady, Aishi noted. He seems too short-sighted to remain king for long.
Which is why he's probably going to lose his throne, Serene said. I suspect that is why the Yawn is here.
A good point, my lady, Aishi noted in his deep voice.
He floated in front of her painting for a moment, studying its irregular blotches and semi-straight lines.
You're getting better, my lady.
Don't patronize me.
No, really, Your Highness. When you started painting 5 years ago, I could never tell what it was you were trying to depict.
And this is a painting of... Aishi paused.
A bowl of fruit? He asked hopefully.
Serene sighed in frustration. She was usually good at everything she tried. But the secrets of painting completely eluded her. At first she had been astounded at her lack of talent, and she had pressed on with a determination to prove herself. Artistic technique, however, had totally refused to bow beneath her royal will. She was a master of politics, an unquestionable leader, and could grasp even Jean Doe's mathematics with ease. She was also a horrible painter. Not that she let it stop her. She was also undeniably stubborn. One of these days, Aishi, something will click, and I'll figure out how to make the images in my head appear on canvas.
Of course, my lady.
Serene smiled. Until then, let's just pretend I was trained by someone from some Svordish school of extreme abstractionism.
Ah, yes, the school of creative misdirection. Very good, my lady.
Two men entered the throne room to present their case to the king. There was little to distinguish them. Both wore fashionable vests over colorful frilled shirts and loose, wide-cuffed trousers. Much more interesting to Serene was a third man, one who was brought into the room by a palace guard. He was a nondescript, light-haired man of Aeonic blood, dressed in a simple brown smock. It was obvious that he was horribly underfed, and there was a look of despairing hopelessness in his eyes that Serene found haunting. The dispute regarded the peasant.
Apparently he had escaped from one of the noblemen about 3 years ago, but had been captured by the second. Instead of returning the man, the second noble had kept him and put him to work. The argument wasn't over the peasant himself, however, but his children. He had married about 2 years ago, and had fathered 2 children during his stay with a second noble. Both nobles claimed ownership of the babies. "I thought slavery was illegal in Eirilan," Serene said quietly.
"It is, my lady," Aishi said with a confused voice. "I don't understand."
"They speak of figurative ownership, cousin," a voice said from in front of her. Serene peeked around the side of her canvas with surprise. Lucal, Kyine's oldest son, stood smiling beside her easel.
"Lucal, what are you doing here?"
"I'm one of the most successful merchants in the city, cousin," he explained, walking around the canvas to regard the painting with a raised eyebrow. "I have an open invitation to the court. I'm surprised you didn't see me when you came in."
"You were there?"
Lucal nodded. "I was near the back, reacquainting myself with some old contacts. I've been out of town for some time."
"Why didn't you say anything?"
"I was too interested in what you were doing," he said with a smile. "I don't think anyone has ever decided to requisition the middle of Iodin's throne room to use as an art studio."
Serene felt herself blushing.
"It worked, didn't it?"
"Beautifully.
Which is more than I can say for the painting." He paused for a moment.
"It's a horse, right?"
Serene scowled.
"A house?" he asked.
"It is not a bowl of fruit either, my lord," Aishi said. "I already tried that."
"Well, she said it was one of the paintings in this room," Lucal said.
"All we have to do is keep guessing until we find the right one."
"Brilliant deduction, Master Lucal," Aishi said.
"That's enough, you two," Serene growled. "It's the one across from us. The one I was facing while I painted."
"That one?" Lucal asked.
"But that's a picture of flowers."
"And?"
"What's that dark spot in the middle of your painting?"
"Flowers," Serene said defensively.
"Oh." Lucal looked once more at Serene's painting, then looked up at her model again.
"Whatever you say, cousin.
Maybe you could explain Iodin's legal case before I turn violent, cousin," Serene said with threatening sweetness.
"Right. What do you want to know?"
"Our studies tell us slavery is illegal in Eirilan, but those men keep referring to the peasant as their possession."
Lucal frowned, turning eyes on the two contesting nobles.
"Slavery is illegal, but it probably won't be for long. 10 years ago, there weren't any nobles or peasants in Eirilan, just Elantrians and everyone else. Over the past decade, commoners have changed from families that owned their own land to peasants beneath feudal lords, to indentured servants, to something more resembling ancient Fjordel serfs. It won't be much longer before they're nothing more than property."
Serene frowned. The mere fact that the king would hear a case such as this, that he would even consider taking a man's children away from him to save some nobleman's honor, was atrocious. Society was supposed to have progressed beyond that point. The peasant watched the proceedings with dull eyes, eyes that had systematically and deliberately had the light beaten out of them.
"This is worse than I had feared," Serene said.
Lucal nodded at her side. "The first thing Iodin did when he took the throne was eliminate individual landholding rights. Eirilan had no army to speak of, but Iodin could afford to hire mercenaries, forcing the people into compliance. He declared that all land belonged to the crown, and then he rewarded those merchants who had supported his ascension with titles and holdings. Only a few men, such as my father, had enough land and money that Iodin didn't dare try to take their property. Serene felt her disgust for her new father rise. Once, Eirilan had boasted the happiest, most advanced society in the world.